Chapter 5, Persuasive Presentation Power, P3. Make people want to say yes. After all the preparation you do, the research and planning, the studying, the product knowledge that you must have, every single thing you do is reduced to one pivotal point, the point at which your pre-work is rendered either useful and successful or completely irrelevant. What is that singular thing that is so critical to your success in the world of sales? It is the point at which you stand before your audience and literally present your ideas. It is your ability to persuade your buyer or your customer to make a yes decision. It is said that some products and services sell themselves. That may be true when you're talking about fresh water in front of a dehydrated man. It may be true if you offer bread to a starving woman. But don't be misled into thinking that your product will just jump off the shelves into the shopper's baskets, or that your customers will just bombard your house for more vitamins every month. And it doesn't matter if your product has exceptional quality, effectiveness, or pricing. First, in the Western economies of the world, competition is so intense that many excellent products die and fade away. Syndicated research and industry periodicals indicate that consumer loyalty is decreasing across all kinds of categories. Consumers simply have too much choice to worry about your individual brand. Second, think about how your company works. It is not enough to have sales. The company wants increased sales year after year after year. That continuous growth does not come by simply having great products. The products must be presented in an appealing way to induce buyers and users, or no growth is possible. If you are in the selling game, your products or services may sell somewhat without you, but for them to grow and flourish, for you to earn your bonus, you must have the ability to present them and persuade others to want them. The material in this chapter is a brief summation of just one section of a 2 to 3 day intensive sales workshop that we conduct. This workshop is called P3, Persuasive Presentation Power. It is a series of rigorous, hands-on activities that prepare a sales organization to move their customers and accounts to action and to drive significant increases in business. It builds capabilities in sales strategies, tactics, and communication skills that are used by the masters in the selling game. The most highly successful companies, or the best in class, they also teach many of these principles to their people. Expansive treatment of the entire P3 program goes well beyond the intent and the promise of this book. We will focus on just a small portion of that 2 to 3 day seminar. It is the 5 steps of persuasive presentation power. The rest of the P3 program is summarized in the following process chart. That is the process chart that you can see by turning to page 79 in your book, Persuasion Power. Please turn off the audio, get your hard copy book, and turn now to page 79. Examine that diagram, as it's going to be instrumental in the discussion we're about to undertake. Now, if you want to improve your sales effectiveness dramatically, it is important that you learn the 5 steps of persuasive presentation power as depicted on that chart on page 79 of the book. And then you have to practice them enough so that they become a natural part of how you present on a regular basis. Be careful, though. It is easy to dismiss this work as just an optional approach. After all, you've seen so many approaches in your time, you've been trained on so many ways to sell. However, this is not just some process designed for sales organizations. Rather, it is a natural process of effective human communications that has been adapted to the sales business because it is so simple and so effective. Here's an overview of persuasive presentation power. Given that this workshop is a 2 to 3 day intensive event, at best, it is only a brief exposure. Step 1, review the situation briefly. Step 2, state the proposition. Step 3, explain how it works. Step 4, WIIFM. Step 5, suggest next steps. Let's take them one at a time. Step 1, situation review. Before you pounce on your customer with your precious product or your program, relax, think, observe, and plan. The average salesperson appears before the buyer with one primary thing in mind, and that is actually step two, the proposition. Many salespeople simply want to sell an idea, a product, or a service, with very little energy given typically to the other steps in the process. In the sales game, the masters know instinctively that there is other work that needs to be done in order to make the main proposition attractive. Situation review, the first step, calls for you to understand the current situation in which your buyer operates and make sure that your proposition fits positively into that background. Until you do, your precious proposition may be perceived as irrelevant at best or an annoying irritation at worst. First, let's talk about understanding. What are your buyer's needs, constraints, desires, fears, suspicions, and challenges? What or who makes her life difficult? What are her likes and dislikes? What are her desired situations that are currently unsatisfied? Second, let's talk about relevance. How many of those situations can you connect to your idea or product? In other words, the things that cause your buyer or your prospect or customer pain, challenge, issue, how many of those things can go away by having your buyer or your customer say yes to your product? In other words, you may be concerned personally about all the issues and opportunities that face your buyer, but only the relevant ones should be addressed in this presentation. Construct a summary of those situations that are pertinent for the occasion, and do so in such a way that future outcomes are brought to the present for immediate effect to stimulate a yes answer now. Use visionary language. Use words that are gracious, sensitive, and understanding. Use stories, use analogies. Make sure that your audience or your buyer gets the idea and accepts it. Here's an example where Sharon, the customer, is overweight and a perfect candidate for your nutritional product. Hey Sharon, I recall you telling me that you are a million miler in airline travel. I don't know how you do it. You're always on the move, traveling from city to city and living in hotel rooms so many days per year. Don't you sometimes hunger for a simple home-cooked meal? What's it like to eat in so many restaurants across the country? Pause. In fact, I know a lady named Carol who travels almost as much as you. She tells me that she used to be very disciplined about what she eats, but that since she started traveling, balanced nutrition is a very hard thing for her to maintain. Arriving late in a hotel room, having to visit the snack machine, grabbing whatever her client provides for lunch, going out late for business dinners and so on. Can you relate to any of that? Pause. Well, in 1 year, between the lack of time to exercise on the road and the difficulty of managing her diet well, Carol put on 21 pounds of body weight and she complained about feeling sluggish and very easy to get tired. Can you imagine what would happen if that continued for 2 to 3 years more in a row? Now the discussion continues as you involve Sharon in the situation. Ask her questions and listen for her responses. One outcome is that Sharon makes a comment that is a perfect setup for the idea that you want to sell. Another outcome is that you lead the discussion to the point where you introduce your idea. Once you get Sharon to begin to feel that situation, to identify with the issue, now you're ready to make the next step. Tell her what your proposition is. So here's step two, the proposition. Here are a couple questions that may sound so simple, you could believe them to be unnecessary, but they're not. What are you selling? What do you want? Average salespeople are not very specific about what they're selling. They do not have a clear picture of what they want from the customer. You may do an adequate job of step one, summarizing the situation, but unless you're clear about what you want, the customer is likely to be confused. Until you are clear, the customer may perceive that there's no need to make a decision and take action right now. Here's another difference between the masters and the average people. Average salespeople wait until the end of their presentation, and then they employ the closing techniques, as it were, to move the buyer to a decision. The masters do the process so well that that they begin to close, in other words, to search for yes, right from the start of the presentation. The proposition, step two, is so closely linked to the situation review, step one, and it is so clearly expressed that the customer simply gets it. So what do you want from the customer? Here's an example. I suggest that you buy 1 month's supply of this XYZ nutritional booster. Use it for 30 days to help you feel good and to look good. That is, if it's possible to look any better than you look right now and you smile. Here's how it works. It's real simple. And then you continue. Notice that the next step, how it works, is smoothly introduced as implied assent or permission that the proposition was accepted. You don't end step two and then say, let's go to step three. You use step two to introduce step three, and the transition is smooth. So here is step three, how it works. This step clarifies the details, the mechanics, the logistics, and any other functional explanations that are necessary for the buyer to agree that the idea is practical and workable. Now, here's an important note. The objective is not to provide every conceivable detail about the idea, or about the product, or about your program. It is not to educate the buyer. Rather, it is to persuade the buyer that the proposition is simple enough to work okay, to work well. There are two extremes to avoid in this step. The first extreme is to avoid confusion. If you are tempted to be exhaustive in your explanation, if you're very detail-oriented, you may have the very opposite effect of what you want. The buyer may get confused and therefore believe that the idea will not work because you've provided so much information around it. The second extreme to avoid is to neglect pertinent details that are needed to help the buyer see the feasibility of the idea. For example, a sales representative has a promotion to sell a retail customer. The representative shows up to sell the promotion without thinking through the implementation details. You can't just go to Kroger, Winn-Dixie, or Vaughn's stores and sell a promotion that was sent to you from headquarters. No. You sell a specific back-to-school event to be fielded on the 18th of August, featuring a certain mix of products with a 20% price discount and a floor display, and the display sits in the school supply aisle in the top 45 stores in that chain. Besides, that detail only applies to Vaughn's. The package for Kroger and for Winn-Dixie would be constructed differently. The different retailer pricing strategies, their operational procedures, their merchandising policies, and other considerations have to be addressed in order for the program to work well in those stores. Here's another example. You ask me to try your company's telephone service. That's the proposition. Now you must quickly explain how it works. Look at this explanation. Okay. Here's how this will work. Once you agree to try the service, we will fill out this LOA form with your name, address, phone numbers, date of birth, and social security number. You will need to decide if you want inside wire service and international one-call discounts. The company will then do a credit check against your name and decide if you qualify. If you're approved, your service will be switched. But we will use the same fiber optic networks as the big companies use. Both your intralada and your interlada service will be switched to my company. When you get your first bill, you may notice that the price is lower than your past company. That's it. Your phone number does not change. Even the dial tone will sound the same. What do you think of that explanation? Doesn't this sound like too much information? Before you ever give me a chance to say yes to the idea, you're already raising my apprehension level by requesting very personal information such as my birthday, my social security number, and other things. You otherwise have a simple idea, but you've now complicated it. You've told me that they're going to do a credit check, and they're going to do all kinds of things. They're going to want all kinds of information from me. Now I have to be thinking about whether that all makes sense to me or not. Now, the question at this point may be, so are you trying to hide something from the customer? Shouldn't everything be divulged and disclosed up front? The objective is not to hide information from your customer or from your buyer. No, the objective is effective communication. That means providing the details in a smooth way that does not interrupt the decision process, but in fact supports it. There is a way to get personal information from your friend or your customer without building apprehension and skepticism. The P3 workshop helps you to learn how to present with expertise in this area. Now, here's a more effective version of that previous explanation, how it works. Okay, here's how this will work. Once you agree to try the service, we will complete a one-page application and submit it to the company. After you're approved, nothing else will change except for the color of your phone bill and the total cost. You will notice that you save a few dollars every month compared to the current phone company you're using. That's it. Your phone number does not change. Even the dial tone is going to sound the same. And you chuckle. Notice that the second statement of explanation is shorter. Notice that there is no direct mention of insider gobbledygook like LOA, Interlada, Intralada, International One Call, or fiber optics. What the dickens are those things anyway? And why does a customer need to know any of that just to say yes to your service? All the customer needs to know is how to apply and get this new dial tone service. Some customers may ask for technical details. If and when that happens, tell them exactly what needs to be told. Many presentations are met with a no just because the buyer or customer cannot visualize how the idea is workable. It is your responsibility to make that concern go away through a simple explanation. The customer or buyer needs just enough information to know that the proposition will work. And then you move on to step four. And step four is WIIFM. There is one radio station to which every buyer in the world listens repeatedly, and that's it, WIIFM, and it stands for What's in It for Me. Here's one simple exercise I recommend that you do repeatedly until it becomes instinctive. Visualize your buyer or your audience repeating this question: What's in it for me? What's in it for me? And as you do your research, your analysis, and your presentation construction, for every single selling presentation, seek to answer that question, what's in it for me, from the other person's perspective. Although it's so simple to do, this practice has the power to revolutionize your business and to cause your results to explode upward. Tuning into the wavelength of WIIFM will start having curious effects on your presentations. You will cut out up to 30% or even 50% of your PowerPoint presentation slides. You will throw away most of the nice pre-printed selling pages that you receive from headquarters. Why? Because they were created by folks at headquarters who never had a clue or have forgotten about the customer actually wanting something specific. They don't know what that thing is. Your presentations will become short on fluff and they will captivate your audience more. Bottom line, you will sell more. We deliberately did not label this section as benefits. This is certainly the place where the benefits of your ideas are reinforced. However, we will also go deeper to address the desired end states that form the primary motivation for why your customers buy. This is where your audience or your buyer begins to find answers to what's in it for me. Now, here's a point that you should not miss. The masters in the selling game who use this process, they never wait until step four, what's in it for me, to begin discussing the benefits and the advantages of their ideas. No, this is similar to our previous comment on beginning to close from the start of the presentation. From the very start, benefits, advantages, and reasons why are carefully interwoven in all the language that you speak. In the situation review, promised advantages are expressed as a way to solve the problems and to realize the opportunities. Inherent in the proposition are advantages and benefits. Even the how it works steps is beneficial because of its simplicity and because of its direct impact on the problem or the opportunity that's facing the buyer. So why then is there a fourth step called WIIFM? This fourth step is a reinforcement of the main benefits and the desired end states that the buyer will enjoy from taking action on the idea proposed. This step may directly address the qualitative and the quantitative advantages of saying yes to your idea. It makes the buyer feel good. It reconfirms that the proposition has made so much sense all the way along through the presentation that it is now time to say yes. In the P3 workshop, participants are taught how to calculate and estimate quantitative benefits, how to reinforce benefits with desired end states, and how to communicate them with conviction. For now, it is sufficient to say that your responsibility in step 4 is to present a set of compelling reasons why it is good for the buyer to say yes to what you offer. Depending on the audience, benefits come in a variety of forms. Here are a few examples: sales, dollar volume, market share, and profits; efficiency, cost savings, return on investment, and throughput; process, simplicity, ease of use, and reduced downtime. Another example of process: time saving, convenience, and speed. Product: cleanness, freshness, and true colors. And finally, health: balanced nutrition, fitness, and wellness. Benefits are most relevant and purposeful when they are connected directly to desired end states. Recall in our previous discussion that desired end states are the ultimate personal advantages that demand no explanation. They are ends in themselves, desired for their pure inherent goodness. Features, on the other hand, are merely means to an end. Benefits are more desirable, but also means to an end. Desired end states push the buttons that are primary motivators of human behavior. And here are a few examples of desired end states. Remember now, when we were talking about benefits, we were talking about sales and efficiency and process and product and health. A list of desired end states would include items like the following: self-confidence, self-esteem; recognition, praise, a sense of accomplishment; social fit, social acceptance; looking cool, feeling good, tasting good; comfort, love and happiness; beauty and looking good; a sense of pride and purpose; satisfaction, contentment and peace of mind; a sense of wholeness, intimacy, and connectedness. Notice that all of these end states are emotional, and they're based on experiences, not things, not products, not even facts. When your buyer is persuaded that the acceptance of your idea leads to some of these end states, then you're much closer to getting yes. To tell your buyer that this program will generate $97,000 in additional sales is good, but it's not good enough. Instead, consider this approach. This increase of $97,000 will virtually guarantee that you finish the quarter profitably. Your boss will have to take notice of how strong you are. Can you just imagine the pride and the confidence that you will feel when he, your boss, of all people, is forced to give you public recognition? Now, the inexperienced salesperson is likely to assume that the buyer makes the connection between benefits and what the benefit means for the buyer in terms of emotional experience. But don't make that mistake. Use the connection as a way to look forward and to dream with the buyer about the experience that your idea or your suggestion will generate for him or her. Now, here is the final step, step 5. Mike did a splendid job presenting his promotion to Jan, and Jan said yes, that she would roll up all of the programs and she would distribute the products to the top 45 stores. Mike was excited about this success. Now, he didn't want to discuss it anymore, just in case Jan would change her mind, so he moved on to the next step quickly, and the new product introduction was the next subject of discussion. That was something to come up in the next 2 weeks. 2 months later, the promotion date had passed, and he still did not have a purchase order in hand from Jan on that first sale that he made. Many people refer to this section as closing. You should think about it very differently. What you want at this point is agreement and action. Agreement alone is not enough. In many cases, a salesperson leaves the presence of a customer or a buyer and feels satisfied that a sale has been made based on an agreement, but no action follows. Now, here's the key point you cannot afford to miss. If you get yes without the right action, yes is the same as no. If you get the right action without the verbalized yes, action is the same as yes. Focus your energy on closing the customer to say yes, and you may succeed in doing so, but your customer may use it as a way to get rid of you with no follow-up, no commitment to action following your departure. A verbal agreement is a good first step, but it is not necessary to demonstrate commitment. On the other hand, if you help your customers take the first step, you're on your way to getting what you really want. Now consider Marie and Mikhail. Marie did a splendid job presenting her promotion to Mikhail. He never once said yes, but he had been quite affirmative during the presentation and giving her the right kinds of nod. And even though he expressed some concerns during the presentation, he seemed to be satisfied with her responses. And so after she finished step four, what's in it for me? Marie, who is a master at the art, continued by saying the following. Okay, Mikhail, assuming that everything makes sense so far, I have some work to do and you have some work to do. I've already filled out the order form with just enough quantities to place 3 to 4 dozen pieces of product in each store based on your size A and size B retail stores. At 2 o'clock, when your warehouse manager is back from lunch, I'll talk with him about storage space for the products that will arrive in 2 weeks from today. You'll need to submit this form to your order processing clerk and ask her to cut me a purchase order. I'll pick it up tomorrow afternoon. And then, next Tuesday, I'll see Joe, who is in charge of retail operations. He and I will plan the details for store display space. Just call me if I can do anything else to keep the process as simple as possible. You've got my number. A week later, all the pieces were in place. Marie had covered the necessary next steps to make yes become a reality, even without yes having been verbalized. You can do the same thing in your presentations. Now, don't get me wrong. This discussion is not about how to make a sale without getting a verbal agreement. No. It's primarily about making life simple for your customer by suggesting easy next step, even if yes is never verbalized. In fact, if you do this well, you won't make the kind of mistakes that I made in my earlier years. Here's an example. Several years ago, I talked to Donnie right after a meeting that he and I were attending. I persuaded him to support my business by trying my telephone service. He said yes. I took out the application form and I said, okay, here's all you have to do. Simply complete this form and sign it at the bottom. I'll send it in and you'll be on the service within a week or so. He took the fine print form from me. He held it up to his eyes. He laid it on top of his car and he filled in his name. Then he held it up close to his eyes again, laid it back on the top of the car, and he filled in his address. By the third time that he did this, he said to me, you know what? I'm in a bit of a hurry right now because I have to meet somebody for dinner. So tell you what, let me fill this out when I get home and then I'll mail it back to you. Now the postal delivery service has seemingly done me a huge disservice because until this day, Donnie's letter has not arrived. Do as much as you can to keep it simple for the buyer. Remember, buying decisions are made mostly by emotions and feelings, not logic, not practicality. But as time passes, fickle feelings fade. Ephemeral emotions evaporate. That yes can turn to no if not secured immediately. In the sales business, most postponed actions never materialize. Help your customers to take the first action now, or your yes answer could be the same as no, never. In my previous example about Donnie and the application, I asked him to complete the form. I should have filled in the form myself. I should have just asked him to give me the details. It would have made the next step so simple for him that it would have converted the yes to the actions desired. Make it easy for your customer, for your prospect. Internalize this 5-step process, and it can help you to make more money, to get recognition, and to receive other forms of rewards, and above all, get a sense of accomplishment as your work gains effectiveness and efficiency. But that's not all. There is a dimension to this five-step process that goes far beyond the professional interface of a salesperson trying to peddle products, trying to push programs. It is an intriguing approach that helps you get what you want from others, even if you never set foot in the sales business. We will address this in the next chapter, but be very cautious. That application of this process in the next chapter is a great and powerful force of influence. Use it well, use it honorably, and use it with integrity. So in conclusion, here's the bottom line. You cannot master the selling game until you master the art of persuasion. Persuasion is techniques, style, and feel, all combined. Learn the techniques, the five steps of persuasive presentation power, but apply them with grace and with a natural interactive style, remembering that your customers or your prospects are human. So here it is. Review the situation from the perspective of the customer or the prospect. Ensure that this review is done in a way to render your product or your service relevant. State your proposition and make it as clear as possible. Explain simply how your idea or your offer works. Help the buyer to see that it is easy to apply or to implement. Tune in to WIIFM, What's in It for Me, to reinforce the advantages and benefits that your suggestion will generate for the buyers. Connect the benefits to the desired end state, the emotional experience that your buyer will gain. And finally, outline and initiate next steps to put your offer into motion. When done well, the process makes people want to say yes to you, not only at the sales and marketing interface, but also in your interpersonal life. This could get very interesting, as we will see in the next chapter.